Welcome to the RepChat Inside Stories series, conversations with creative talent and creative entrepreneurial businesses. We discover the inside stories that inspire and motivate creative people to do what they do. I'm in the virtual studio this week with the fascinating and really amazing artist. Her name is Kate Scott. She's a UK contemporary artist. She specializes in abstract paintings. And I believe she's been doing this for over 20 years. I'm not quite so sure how many years in total. And she has a very interesting story and really beautiful work. So Kate, welcome.
Hello, thank you very much for inviting me.
And the first question I'd like to ask you before we go back into where it all started is, how would you describe your art?
So my work is very abstract, but actually going back to something we discussed already, I'm trying to basically talk about an experience, that something that's happened to me. So it could be a memory, it could be something in nature or a feeling. As I paint, sometimes I don't know exactly why I'm doing that, but it will come through. So I think there's something that people recognize in art, that like the line of the horizon or color or the space that opens them up and communicates something. So even though they are abstract, there's something going on. There's a language that I'm conveying. It's quite interesting. Sometimes I learn through the person looking, and I'll even see it through their eyes and think, oh my goodness, you're right, you know, what it's about. So it's abstract, it's passionate, it's authentic. There are times when it can be quite awkward and ugly, and it's not just about beauty. And I just try my best to challenge myself and not take the easy way out. So there's a sort of tension and a beauty in the tension.
So it's a reflection of life?
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
What you see and what you can. So where did it all begin, Kate?
Well, I was at sixth form college and I was doing A-level arts and in Brighton, and basically the cool kids were going to do foundation course. So I was very mediocre academically. I did biology and English as well. And I applied just because that's what the cool, trendy kids in Brighton were doing. And I thought I might do maybe graphic design or fashion or something. So the first major thing that happened was I was living in Brighton. I applied to go to Brighton foundation course and I didn't get in. And it was huge for me. I was so embarrassed and ashamed, actually. But few people didn't get in. It was the best thing that ever happened to me, by the way. But at the time, I was just really embarrassed. So then I had another interview at Hastings, which was in St. Leonard's-on-Sea. And I got in there, and it was just the best. It was an incredible course for amazing people. People like, Jake Chapman. You may not have heard of him, the Chapman brothers. And just met my best friend of my life there. And I sort of felt suddenly like I belonged, having felt a bit odd and deep and, you know, all the things that you think you feel until you meet your tribe. So, and I started doing life drawing and I just got obsessed with it within weeks.
So along this process, you didn't get quite where you thought you might go, but when you were there, you found that you absolutely loved it. You say you found your tribe.
Yeah, because I knew no one else there, maybe a couple of people, but not well. And I was just thrown in. I was only 17. I turned 18 when I was there. And it was just brilliant because it was, I could be whoever I wanted to be. No one knew me. So I wasn't trying to keep up anything, or I could just be who I wanted. And they didn't have a house style. And if you wanted to do something, they would just let you do it. They wouldn't stop you doing it. Whereas some courses, they stop you doing this. And I got obsessed with drawing. But they would take us down to the beach and make us draw the waves, which is pretty, it's impossible. So it's like, wow. What is the idea? Like, how do you capture motion? What does this make you feel? We'd build a fire on the beach and we'd try to draw the flames flickering. That intangible. I think honestly that was it was impossible with using pastel and charcoal, but all of us trying to do it together. sort of laughing about it, but managing in our own way to do it. But I did a lot of life drawing obsessively. And then I know this might be a later question, but I'll get it in now because it's part. There was an amazing tutor called Rod Harmon, who was the head of course. And he came up to me one day when I was drawing and just said, what are you going to apply for your main degree? And I said, I haven't decided yet. I don't know, maybe graphic, not, I really don't know. And he said, well, I think you should do fine art. You've got something to say. And that's all I can tell you. There's something going on here. It's really passionate and brave, and I think you should apply. And it was just a bombshell of positivity and support, really, because I'd been quite relatively mediocre. And my art teacher in my sixth form college, I don't think he liked me and didn't get me, didn't particularly like my work. So I didn't think I had anything that much special to offer. And then this amazing man, who was so kind and inspirational and lovely, just came and gave me that gift. And I honestly changed my life. Yeah.
Amazing. So yeah. Rod Hartman.
Yeah, Rod Harmon. And he had a show about 3 years ago at the Black, it's called the Black Shed Gallery. It's in just outside Hastings. It'll come Battle. And I went to see him there and we had a lovely time, and I bought one of his paintings as a cat because I just thought I need to show him how much he's meant to me. And we've stayed in contact now. We send cards. He doesn't have a phone, he doesn't do email. I have to write to him. He's probably about 80 and he's amazing. So we're back in touch. Yeah.
Wow. So he was a very early influence and a kind of a mentor. Huge. As well.
Yeah, he really was. Yes. Just amazing how just one, like the fact that it wasn't the college I wanted to go to. I met my old best sort of female friend there. And then I met this person that really championed me. He didn't push me. He didn't try and mentor me or tell me what to do, but just giving me that belief and, you know, generously giving me his positive belief was, yeah, really helpful.
So stories of inspiration of then being nudged into the direction of fine art. And since then, you know, when we were chatting before we started recording, you mentioned that you did other things and you had a hiatus in your career. So yeah. I wanted to talk about how the story evolved from the early days of being at college and being inspired to follow fine art.
Okay, well, so I went on to do a fine art degree at North East London Polytechnic, which was really good. I did very well there. Got the only first in my year and encountered some really unsupportive feedback, which I won't go into much, but really, yeah, sort of people who were not comfortable with my success, shall we say. And that was massive for me as a woman. I hated the thought that putting your head above the pedestal, and I don't know if this is even something we should put in the recording, but it had a big effect on me, the fact that someone could dislike me just because I'd done well, nothing to do with who I am as a human, was really difficult. And it probably affected my sense of ambition for quite a long time, because I felt frightened. I didn't want to be not liked. I wasn't prepared to put myself up there and have that criticism again. So even though that was a very successful thing, I actually wasn't particularly happy afterwards because of it. I did get the studio, and it was really difficult working in a vacuum, which is a huge subject that a lot of artists, you know, become, you've supported, you've got a grant. At the time I had a grant, all you have to do is turn up and play and do your paint your pictures and go home and eat and sleep or go out to the pub. There's nothing else to do. No one gave us any structure or idea of how to run our lives or, you know, give ourselves guidelines or structures. And so when you've come out of that, it's really difficult. So to cut a long story short, I ended up doing some voluntary work for a women's activities project and work also. I was the treasurer for a housing cooperative, and I sort of learned these other skills and learned that I was dependable, that people trusted me, that I was accountable, and that kind of gave me a different, another structure. And I had a studio in London, and my life felt more balanced because I had a job. Then I got a job at a women's a women's health charity as a counsellor, and I carried on doing that right through. Yeah.
So think this is an interesting subject. An artist, they give of themselves. The art comes from within. And you need to deal with the feedback and, you know, that support. Just thinking, I'm creating this without any guidance, but it's coming from me. And as you say, balancing that with the need to actually connect with other people and their opinions. And then you said that you did this work with the women, which you said you did for a number of years, didn't you?
Yeah, so I worked as more like an advice worker in London until I had my children. And then we moved back to Brighton, where I was born from London. But when my youngest was about three, a friend of mine told me there was a job advertised for this similar job in a charity in Brighton. So I applied for that. And it was brilliant. And I was trained on the job to be a counsellor in this woman's.
How do you think that your experience as a counsellor has influenced your artwork?
It's a really good question. It was very intense where I was, but it wasn't one of those ones where you saw people on an ongoing basis. Therefore, I didn't bring it home with me or worry about it. So it wasn't like being a social worker or something like that. I gave everything at the time, and then I'd come away and forget. It was really good. But I just think I felt I would walk home with a bounce in my step, knowing I really helped someone. People would be grateful, verbally grateful every single day. And I can't tell you for sure exactly how it's come out in my art. I'm afraid I find that quite a hard question, because I don't know if there is a definite relationship to it. But maybe just being able to be truthful and honest and brave. You know, I would be every day a different people coming in. Some people are really troubled, homeless and drug addicts and furious and abusive, sometimes are just silent or resentful, you know, everything and anything you can imagine. And I think that just taught me that I could deal with most things that be thrown my way.
Absolutely.
So maybe I'm a bit like that with my painting. I'm very resilient. I don't get put off.
So I know that well-being is very important to you, Kate. Something we were discussing. To keep yourself in a good space, what is it that you do? You have a process? Do you do something to keep yourself in a good space?
I won't go too much into it, but I had 8 to 10 years of being a carer for my father, who had depression. It was a major thing in my life, and I didn't really paint throughout that time. Then when he eventually went into a home, I did The Artist's Way, which have you heard of, by Julia Cameron. Mm-hmm. Incredible course, which is for creatives. It's writers, musicians. It's definitely not just artists. And no one knew I was a painter. I kept a low profile that I was already a visual. I just wanted to be no one knew who I was. It was just incredible. And it taught me various tools. One of them was called the morning pages, which is where you journal. You're supposed to journal 3 A4 sides every morning. I don't do it anymore, but I did it religiously during the 10-week course, and it really helped me, because it taught me to get rid of the flotsam and jetsam of the day, the psychological stress. And my personal analogy for it is it's like raking the leaves in your garden. So you clear what's in your way and messing in your mind, and it could be just, I didn't sleep well, I need a wee, I'm annoyed by this, I'm annoyed by that. It's nothing profound. You don't have to punctuate, it's not for anyone else to read, but the effect is that it sort of allows your creativity to flow easier, because you've sort of released some stuff that you're holding on to. So that's something I try my best to do as much as I can. And along with, because of lockdown, so journaling, making sure I get bright sunlight. I'm really trying to do that, because I'm quite nocturnal naturally. And walking, going down to the sea and being present in nature. Those are the main ways.
Journaling, which is kind of the interior, as you say, scraping away the leaves or whatever comes up, getting out in nature. And I've seen some pictures of you by the beach. So imagine that you're, you know, out there in nature. Now, lockdown had some challenges for you, didn't it?
Yes, because I was first of all furloughed for months, and they kept, it was like cat and mouse. They kept on, they were very kind, it wasn't their fault, but they kept on saying, oh, we'll probably have you back in such and such. And then they would say, actually, you're furloughed for another period. And you never knew until days before. So you couldn't plan, I couldn't plan or really properly inhabit my spare time. It was like free falling. I hated it. And I felt really anxious and like, I didn't have a role, and guilty, because I had friends who were teachers and nurses and doctors who had they weren't furloughed. And they were really stressed. And I, instead of enjoying it and thinking, whoopee, I'm being paid to do nothing, I hated it. And then after about 5 months, then they told all of us, all the people that did my job, kind of 90% of the whole company were made redundant. And we were given 3 months garden leave. And it was pretty shoddy. There was no leaving due. It was pretty not great. Mm. And then I thought, okay, F you know, I'm doing my own thing now, this is it, this is the rest of my life, and I'm going to just enjoy and throw myself back into my art. So it's been really interesting, because my daughters have both grown up, been to uni, left home now. My father went into a home and then he died. I was made redundant, so I had three things all kind of in a similar period of time going. And I actually did see a coach for a short while, which was amazing. And I'm still in touch with her. She's wonderful. So I decided to spend a little bit of the money from my redundancy, which is a very small amount, just thinking I need some help here to help structure how I'm going to focus my time now. Yeah.
Well, from, you know, the awareness, the resilience that you have, the flexibility of saying, well, I'm going to turn towards this now. Mm. I know that you've created looking at your work, you know, prolifically throughout this period, and I know you've done virtual exhibitions as well.
Yeah.
We were speaking about those. So how was that?
Well, I think we were talking about that earlier, that you know, at the beginning of lockdown, well, once, particularly after I'd been made redundant, I sort of started to realise that I wasn't going to have the opportunities I normally get. So in Brighton, we have the Brighton Festival, and we do these open houses every year, which is a big community event. And it's absolutely fantastic. And people come, you're either in someone else's house or you can open your own house, and you've got people coming in.
Amazing.
Supporting, looking, buying, discussing, you know, it's just a social, it's wonderful. And I've done it since 2014, and it's been a major part of my life, like how I create community and how I support other people and get supported. So that was the first year. I think it must have been 2019 or 2020, can't quite remember. I think 2019, that we didn't do it. And it was horrible. And I realized I wasn't going to get my work out there unless I pushed, became less worried about putting stuff on Instagram and being a bit more evident of who I am on Instagram. So that's what I started doing. And, you know, as in occasionally putting my own self there to show who I am, because apparently that is what people want. They want to interact and see who the person is that's making the art. And it was difficult, because I've always felt, because my work is quite emotional and sort of a bit spiritual and has quite a strong vibration or resonance, without sounding completely pretentious, I thought, how on earth is people going to understand what this work feels like, what it's about? But actually people can. And if they get more information about who you are, they will.
It's amazing. You know. People really... they like to know the backstory of how did you get to this point. You know, it's whether it's a film or a book or a painting or anything. It's like, well, how did you get to this point? Which is
exactly
what we're exploring. So, and you know, you've got this beautiful body of portfolio work, so much stuff that you've got. Have you ever got halfway through a drawing or a painting and saying, actually, I'm just going to abandon this. It's not quite right. Does that happen to you?
Almost never. Almost never. I think I see it as an absolute challenge, and it's almost like I have to stop myself not expecting to have a fight with a painting. So when things go too well and too easily, I almost don't trust it. I think this is too easy. This is too easy. It can't be serious. It can't be gutsy. So it's almost the other way around.
Fascinating.
And there are certain pieces that are very, very soft and light. There's one that quite recently sold to this amazing menopause yoga teacher who's incredible, and it's very soft and light, and it does have some struggle in it, but it's just very with a light touch and light layering, whereas a lot of them I've just literally attacked the painting again and again and completely changed it, nearly finished it, done all these little touches, then thought I hate it, it's not truthful, it's not as nice as I thought it was, and completely changed it. So I definitely think there's a parallel with my approach to life, is that I believe in myself. If I keep going, I'm going to find, and I sometimes lose quite beautiful things in the process. And you almost mourn them for a while. I think, why did I do that? You know, but then almost always what comes through is something more powerful. It might not be as aesthetic, but it is just more truthful. So that's really, you know, and I've been teaching some collage workshops, mindful collage workshops recently as well. And that's something I teach. I sort of talk to people and share to people with that there's no wrong and that you can always move through. So I think that's kind of a good analogy in a way for life.
It's really powerful. There is no wrong and you can keep on moving.
Yeah.
And so there's this tremendous resilience and flexibility. Yeah. I think we mentioned that before, but this approach, as you say, is quite similar maybe to your approach to life. What are you working on at the moment, Kate?
So I've got about three exhibitions coming up, starting in sort of May, going through to September. So I've got five or six paintings that are in process right now. So, and what I tend to do is to kind of, when I've got probably a bit more of a deadline, I will sort of start getting them closer to finishing. There are some periods where I will just work on one painting forever. So keep going. But if I get to a point where I call it a conversation, so if the painting stops talking to me, but it's not resolved, I will turn it to the wall and then start something else or work into something else. But the other way is that if the conversation's over because it's resolved and it's not talking to me anymore because it is done its own thing. And anyway, that's another process. So I'm working on the body of work for that, really.
For that exhibition. And I read that you like to create with music. So what kind of music do you have in the background when you're doing your work?
I mostly listen to classical music when I'm painting. And the reason for that is because I don't want words, because the narrative will mess with what's going on in my brain. So I sort of see it as an abstract language that I'm trying to speak. So I need to just let it flow through me. And I try not to, I love podcasts. I'm obsessed with podcasts. I'm obsessed with Radio 4 and things. But when I'm painting, it's nearly always music. It can occasionally be rock. It can occasionally be Pink Floyd or, God, all sorts of people, Stormzy or whatever. But it's normally classical, very classical music. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, so many. Mahler and I love, Prokofiev and just many, many composers.
Beautiful, as you say, resonant music, which is accompanying you when you're creating your art.
I find myself painting at a different pace, and sometimes that can inform and change the painting, but I'm okay with that. I think it's quite interesting.
As we're January the 10th, January the 10th today. We're looking forward to a brand new 2022. Well, we're already in it. What are your hopes and aspirations in your work for 2022?
Well, to carry on with what I've been gaining and, you know, in 21 really, and just keep remembering to support other artists as well and to turn up for people, because it's very easy to just receive. I've, you know, it's amazing how it's just so helpful when people make you know, make comments, make an effort to come and see you and share. Doing more things like this, mm-hmm. becoming more visible and being able to, you know, share who I am and what I think about. Yes, ideally to have a gallery as well. That's what I would really like, to have a gallery that I could have some regular shows with. But, you know, I've got a lovely following of people who buy my work and do buy, you know, come back from and buy more than one. And that's amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So community, the idea of the ongoing conversation, working with music and bringing all these things together. Where can people find you?
My website is www.katescottpaintings.com, but I'm most active on Instagram, which is @katescottpaintings. So there was something else I wanted to discuss, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
You said you were going to ask me a bit about, you know, structure, and I was just going to talk about, just say that I've learned, you know, not to, to be compassionate with myself because of not, of having the 5 days and no structure, and I'm still learning that. So there is no, in fact, you've kindly not asked me that question. You said you put on the list what's your daily structure, and there kind of isn't one really. There are sets of self-care and the journaling and things, but sometimes the painting doesn't happen and I can feel really guilty, and then I just think, well, you are producing, you didn't for years, and now also, I've been just really influenced by older women artists, you know, people that have just carried on painting until their 80s, and just think, I've got years ahead of me. It's very exciting. It's so, being this age, coming back to painting, having been a carer, having been a mother, that one thing is this lovely sense of, I have got years ahead of me to explore this and grow this, and it keeps going, and it's wonderful. And it feels quite exciting, actually.
So it's creating a space of, this is what I do, this is who I am, and that needs looking after, that needs support, that needs to seek inspiration. But I just and it's that philosophy that you have, Kate, which is, I just keep on going.
Yes, and I try to be compassionate, and I just think there's no right way. I'm just learning, and that I'm giving myself a pat on the back that I'm painting regularly and I'm producing and I'm selling. And I actually, for my master's thesis, I did a master's in printmaking. I talked about guilt and motivation in the female artist, and these things are all still, I was quoting and interviewing some people, and then talking about people from history like Ava Hess, who was a really amazing conceptual artists in the 60s, and just the problems that women have structuring their life and trying to be a domestic person, someone who looks whatever way they look, to cook, to run a home, and to try and be a creative person as well. That is quite difficult.
It's bringing all those facets together, isn't it? In a whole and authentic way.
Well, I think, and without feeling you look selfish, without feeling that you look selfish by claiming this is what I want to do, and this is what's going to make me happy, and I need to do this to be a happy person to be around for other people.
There's some really interesting messages in this podcast, Kate, so thank you very, very much. We'll also drop your email and your Instagram and your website in the show notes as well.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Have a wonderful day. Bye.
And you. Bye, Kath.
Thanks for listening to the RebChat Inside Stories series. We hope you enjoyed it. To feature your inside story, contact us at www.rebcatcreations.com or follow us on Instagram @RebCatCreations.